You're listening to the Ceres Sustainability Podcast, an ongoing conversation with investors, corporations, policymakers, and environmentalists about how financial markets and businesses are trying to address the most pressing environmental issues of the day. From Ceres, I'm your host, Ian Gray. Remember the old axiom, all roads lead to Rome? Well, the same can be said about the flow of natural resources and labor to U.S. consumer markets. Take an icon of American consumer culture, the venerable Levi's 501 jean. Cotton, grown in India, is spun into fabric and shipped to apparel factories in places like Guatemala. Local workers in the factories sew the jeans and insert metal rivets and zippers mined and manufactured from places like China. When finally assembled, cargo crates of the hip huggers are shipped and distributed to retail stores all over the U.S. and the rest of the world. The whole process takes months, from planting the first seed of cotton, to placing the final rivet, to closing the sale at the cash register. Managing this diffuse web of resources and factory sites is one of the most complex and evolving challenges of running a modern corporation. Michael Kobori, Vice President of Supply Chain and Social and Environmental Sustainability at Levi's, recently spoke with the Ceres podcast about how Levi's sourcing decisions impact local labor and environmental conditions. Michael, thank you so much for joining the Ceres podcast today.
Oh, it's my pleasure to do that. Thanks.
So when we talk about supply chain with in the retail sector, like a company like Levi's, you know, this issue kind of really emerged around child labor issues and sweatshop issues, kind of hit consumer consciousness at least 10 years ago. What are the emerging issues in supply chain now that Levi's is dealing with, and how have these labor issues been dealt with?
Well, you're correct to say that about 10 or 15 years ago, these issues did reach a peak, certainly in the U.S. market, around allegations of child labor in various factories producing for the U.S. market. We established our code of conduct and started our monitoring program in 1991. So we were the first company to have that kind of a code of conduct for labor standards, environment, and health and safety standards for our suppliers. And so we've been monitoring our suppliers since then.
Where's the responsibility of the company in terms of, you can create a standard, but how do you make sure that the country where that factory is located is enforcing that standard?
Well, one of the reasons that we do monitor our factories and work directly with the management to improve the labor conditions is because in many of the countries, the governments lack the power to enforce the standards that are on the books. And so certainly we monitor the conditions so we understand what are the issues in a factory that need to be addressed. And then we work with the management to make improvements on those issues. And we give them a certain period of time to do that. And if they don't, then potentially our orders with them are at risk. And we have had to go that step on occasion, but it's a very rare occasion because most of the time when a company sees that its business is at risk, they take very quick action to address the issues.
Maybe you can dig in a little bit deeper into an issue where you've had with maybe a specific supplier in a country. What happened when you found they weren't following the codes that you've set, and how did you deal with that issue?
Well, the classic issue that we talk about really happened very early on. This was in the early 90s when we first announced our code and we started monitoring our suppliers to it. And we found in two of our suppliers in Bangladesh, there were a number of underage workers. So our standard working age is 15 years. So we and the supplier identified a number of workers that were under 15. And so the question was, what do we do? Do we just tell the supplier to fire those workers? Because what is going to happen to them? They're underage. Their families are probably not going to be able to afford to send them back to school. They're probably going to be sent off either to another factory or to do something else that may be even more dangerous to them. So we worked with the supplier to set up a fairly interesting and very different kind of solution. The supplier continued to pay them a stipend so that they could return to school. We paid for their books and school materials. And then once those workers reached legal working age, the supplier offered them their jobs back if they wanted them. And that was good 15 years ago, and I was in Bangladesh a couple of years ago, went back to the same supplier who we still use and asked them about this case, and they said that they had actually kept track of those workers. And some of them were still in the factory sewing. Others had gotten married and become housewives. Others had gone into other occupations. So it was really very interesting to see that the factory had actually tracked the workers throughout their careers, and some are still at the factory.
So we've talked about labor issues a bit in terms of the factories where jeans are produced. What about some of the environmental impacts of your supply chain, and how is Levi's managing those emerging trends?
So we have spent most of the past 17 years on labor issues and strengthening the performance of our contractors around labor concerns primarily, as well as health and safety for the workers. About 10 years ago, we were fairly strong, I think, on the environment. I think our performance over the past few years has not been so stellar in that area, and so what we have done is really come back to the environment recently. So we're now relaunching our environmental vision and strategies, and we have done, in preparation for doing this, done a full life cycle assessment of some of our products. And what we find is the biggest environmental impacts are at the cotton growing phase and at the consumer use phase. So it's consumers washing and drying the product over the life of that product. So those are some of the areas that we're going to be focusing on.
And cotton, for instance, is one of the most water-intensive and land-intensive crops. What are some of the thoughts inside Levi's about, you know, jeans are always, they've always been made out of cotton. How do you mitigate those costs?
Well, it's very difficult to predict. One of the things that we're going to be doing is trying to understand the impacts of cotton, the social and environmental impacts of cotton. As you point out, it is a very water-intensive and chemical-intensive crop. We're not going to stop using cotton, or you know, it's in 97% of our products. So we can't stop using cotton, but what we can do is really try to understand the sustainability impacts much better, and then begin to figure out how can we make cotton a more sustainable crop. There are different things going on. There's organic exchange, there's the Better Cotton Initiative, there are a number of there's other alternative fibers that we're starting to look at now. So there's a number of ways that we believe we can approach that issue.
And I'm curious, as climate change starts to impact growing patterns of different kinds of crops, as you have changing water uses and increasing water scarcity, how is Levi's analyzing the risk of competing interests and competing needs for the water that is currently being used?
Well, again, we're taking a look at cotton and its different social and environmental impacts. And one of the reasons we are is because some of the factors you're pointing out have led to the price of cotton today being higher than it ever has been. And so just from a pure business standpoint, it's a risk that we need to understand much better. And we realize that it is due to changing climate factors, shifting of agricultural production to food crops, to biofuel crops. And so there's all kinds of things. It's the changing climate patterns that affect where you can grow cotton. So a number of factors are at play here that we need to understand better, how they impact the price of cotton, because obviously we're concerned about that. And again, what are some of the things that we might be able to do as a significant purchaser of cotton? Also, not just from that purchasing end, but are there things that we may want to do or can do at the farm level?
What's an example at Levi's of a way you've done this total life cycle analysis of your products, and how has it started to maybe change some of your product lines or business strategy?
Well, one of the things that we have done is try to be as thoughtful as we can about putting Levi's Eco into the marketplace. And so in Europe, for example, the product that has gone into the European marketplace is not just 100% organic, but it's also designed and constructed using low impact dyes. It's actually all natural dyes and finishes on the garment. so it's no industrial chemicals on the garment. Coconut buttons are used rather than metal buttons. We have eliminated the use of rivets in part of the front pocketing. So we're trying to lessen the overall environmental impact of that garment. Really trying to be much more true to the concept of sustainability.
And so maybe the last question here, what are the biggest challenges as you continue to improve your supply chain sourcing and the performance of your suppliers?
Well, I think one of the biggest challenges actually is referring to something I mentioned early in our conversation, which is shifting out of this monitoring or policing model that we're currently in to really focusing our resources more on making real change in factories. I think as a footwear and apparel industry, we spend far too much of our resources on monitoring factories rather than creating real change in factories. So I think that's one of the biggest challenges of the future. I think another big challenge for us is how do we take companies who are more sustainable from a social and environmental perspective and get consumers to reward that behavior? That is, if we can crack that code of how to get consumers to change their purchasing patterns so that companies that are making the commitment to social and environmental sustainability are getting rewarded in the marketplace, will completely shift companies' behavior.
Michael, thanks so much for taking some time to talk with us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
That was Michael Kobori, Vice President of Social and Environmental Sustainability at Levi's, talking about ways in which Levi's is trying to lessen the environmental footprint of their garments through their supply chain. For more information on ways in which corporations are rethinking their relationships to their suppliers, or if you have comments on this podcast or ideas for future podcasts, visit our website www.series.org/podcast. Thanks for listening this time. For Series, I'm Ian Gray.